championships, 27 SEC titles, 131 first-team All-Americans, 70 postseason appearances, 39 postseason victories. This is Alabama football. And this is Alabama Tradition with Martin Houston and Ryan Fowler on Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
Crimson Tide football. We're going to get a lot of things started. Chris Landry is going to help us recap last week from a scouting perspective. We're going to break down the Alabama guys, talking about the Senior Bowl. We spent a lot of time last week talking about that. Alabama has also added two new coaching staff. Jay Graham has been added to the coaching staff. He will be the special teams coordinator and also going to be coaching tight end. So Jay Graham there, Alabama Nick Saban announcing that. Quote, we are pleased to be able to add Jay Graham to our staff. Jay is well-respected across the country for his knowledge of the game and his ability to recruit. He has experience at numerous schools across the SEC footprint with a proven track record for his ability to teach the game and develop young men both on and off the field and in life. End quote. That is Nick Saban. Jay Graham owns 15 years of coaching experience. We're going to talk about that. We're going to break that down from a lot of different angles. Nick Saban has also added to the off-the-field role. Todd Watson is going to be a special assistant to the head coach. And if you remember, Butch Jones had this position here at Alabama. So Todd Watson is going to be the guy. We're going to break that down. A lot of Senior Bowl, a lot of NFL draft, a lot of things happening here in Tuscaloosa. Alabama is also on the eve of National Signing Day. And a lot of projections right now that Alabama will sign, according to the rankings, the number one class in college football history. When you talk about this recruiting class and all the different five stars signing it, it's crazy when you look at the length and how Nick Saban is able to keep everything together. Back in May, we were talking about Nick Saban in the 50s. Now he's going to finish with the number one class, and we'll welcome in Chris Landry, LandryFootball.com, who covers college football. Chris, I hope you've had a great Tuesday. Welcome into Alabama Tradition.
I have. Good to be back with you again. And don't you find it is anticlimactic? I mean, we've got signing day tomorrow, and it's all pretty much done. And, I mean, it's the work has been done in December, and they're not even – there's very little news going to happen tomorrow anyway, you know, all around the country. I'm not a big fan of it because I think if we have a signing day, it should be like in July or August. Make it an early signing day, and I think signing day should be like more end of February. But, yeah, it's basically going to be a celebration of, you know, what's already been accomplished, but it's – going to be interesting to see. But we already know how it's going to turn out, I guess, is what I'm getting at. I don't know how you feel about it.
Well, Chris, let me back up a couple of minutes. When you look at coaches, because of the early signing period, that it's kind of become the main signing period, and then when you back up and you take a look at what this late signing period, just kind of the leftover guys. I say leftover is not disrespectful, but it's not as the proportions is not there.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
What are the head coaches saying about now? Because we're about 3 years, I guess, into this early signing period. Even Nick Saban took a year to kind of adjust. But what are you hearing out there in the coaching fraternity about this early signing period? Do they like it? Do they enjoy it, or is it too much pressure? What's the word out there?
They like it more than I do. So, okay. I mean, it doesn't really matter what I think. They think it helps them get their class out of the way sooner because, again, majority of the class is in. And it allows them to get started on the 2022 class sooner. And it allows you to see kind of where you are with who you've got left and kind of – so let's say you are one of those schools that have – a few guys left, and you make the move. You know, you've got limited guys that limited spots and limited guys left, so you can kind of hone in on the one or two or three guys. Now, in some instances, it's different. And, they've got a lot more, you know, lack of stability and a lot more issues there. And to me, it has an effect. Look, my feeling is the calendar of college football is off, meaning, you know, if you have a coaching change, you for pretty much write off a class. I mean, it's not going to be, there's not a whole lot you can do. I mean, it's just pretty much done. I mean, you can pretty much say you're not going to have much of a class and you're scrambling, and then you got your first real class is the next year. You know, I think, again, having an early signing day and with the stipulation that if a school changes their coach, that kid that signs in July or August, you know, they can have a redo. I mean, they can go back, and that's null and void if the coach is not there. But it gives more opportunities for these coaching staffs to get put in place, and you can maybe recover and recoup a class and get it going. But for the most part, they like it. Here's what I think. I think the sport of college football misses the excitement of signing day, because right now it's thrown in right prior to Christmas, so people don't pay attention to it. It's right in the middle of the bowl season, and people are more concerned about how their team's going to do in a bowl game, or particularly if they're in the playoffs, and then you have it, it's done. You know, we talk about it, you talk about it, I talk about it, but the masses don't get into it. I just think that, could you imagine if you had it end of February and it was, you know, a lot of big names and a culmination of that, that would be huge in terms of being able to make the news cycle of college football bigger. The other thing that's changed it is you're going to have guys that, even the ones that haven't signed, you're going to have schools that want to keep a few slots open for college free agents, which is the transfer portal. So the whole game has changed quite a bit different than it used to be.
Well, and you meant the conversation right there. You talked about the it would help with a news cycle. NFL, I think, does a good job of making that news cycle stretch out and stay at the spotlight. Maybe that's one of the reasons they master it of keeping.
Absolutely.
And so maybe when you look at college football, it kind of overlapped. But then I wonder if it was not purposely done, because – you know, a lot of the basketball people get jealous of football. There's a division there, even though that, you know, it's not a bitterness or hatred. It's just they want basketball attention to be basketball season. So you almost wonder if maybe the NCAA tried to do that to maybe eliminate some of the attention that football was getting on National Signing Day and move it to early signing period. And I also think it was done for parity as well.
I think the coaches like it because they get to put the large part of recruiting done before Christmas. That's what I keep hearing. We like it. We get to put that to bed. And okay, I mean, you know, that's fine. So I mean, look, I don't think it's the ideal situation. Look, I mean, on the basketball part, I'm with you. I don't know why we don't push college basketball should start. College basketball should be a second semester sport. It should be in January. You start it in January, and then I know it's March Madness, but why not have it April Madness? Why not finish in the 1st of May? And then, you know, basically everything back on. I mean, ridiculous being playing games in November and December. You know, you're going to lose ground, and no one's really that interested. I think December in college football should be more about – I'm a believer that we should have bowl games, and then we pick the four playoff teams after the bowl game. So I think December should be all college football all the time. It should be exciting, and then college basketball should start in January. And for those that really like it, in the Southeast is where they like it. I admit I keep an eye on it. I don't watch it. But college baseball, you know, start that later into where – instead of finishing it in June, finish it in July, early August. Think how much more popular college baseball could grab the national spotlight when there is nothing going on in the middle of the summer. Can you imagine if in July, the dog days of July, when people are trying to figure out what to watch, and if you had the baseball regionals and the World Series. I think that would – to me, that's how I would do the cycle of the three major sports. But nobody's asked me, so I'll shut up.
Well, no, but I do think it's a great conversation. We're also going to take phone calls here. Chris Landry, LandryFootball.com, LandryFootball.com. So we're talking about the eve of National Signing Day. Nick Saban, again, getting the job done with a number one recruiting class. Or some are saying that this may be the best ever college class that they've ever signed. So we'll see if that develops. And there's a couple of guys that right now on the prospect. When you look at position from high school to college, in your opinion, is there a group that it's harder transition from the high school ranks to the college ranks? I mean, we've used to say quarterback, but these high school coaches are doing such a great job with coaches and all the quarterback camps. These guys are able to make easier transitions. But is there a position group that you see of having a hard time transitioning to the college side of things, or maybe just a little bit more difficult than some of the other?
I think offensive line is very difficult. I think, certainly being in the signal caller position, the safeties, the inside backers, offensive linemen, you're right. Quarterbacks have become easier to get on the field athletically. I still think it's difficult. It's still a lot to adjust to, but those are the more difficult positions to be able to learn and adjust to get on the field. Now, there are always exceptions. There are always guys that are just extraordinarily, prepared and ready to go and play. I still think that if you've got a true freshman that's playing early, that's either really, really rare, but it usually is combined with you just don't have a guy that's quite good enough to lead. So, I mean, remember, like, for example, most recently, probably the guy that did the best job recently was Trevor Lawrence. Tua didn't really earn that spot to the end of the – well, to the championship game. But remember, Kelly Bryant was a starter and, not much there. And then, I remember being there in the spring and, I was aware of Trevor, but they told me, wait till you see this kid is, he's got the whole team wrapped around his finger. I mean, they just follow him like a, baby ducks following a mama duck. He was an alpha dog leader as a true freshman, early enrollee. That was Trevor Lawrence. In middle of the halfway through that season, he took over as a true freshman. That happens more than it used to. It's still pretty rare, though. I mean, I do. I think it's really rare that you hand it over there. And when you do, it's, again, because you have a little bit of a void. In other words, it really shouldn't happen if you think about it. You should have some experience. You should have a Mac Jones type of a guy, at least, that has some experience in the system that you can turn to. But sometimes the best option is this really talented guy that comes in and takes over, and we've seen it more and more now.
I want to talk about some coaches. I want to work to the Senior Bowl, and we're going to spend an entire segment on the Senior Bowl because you were there, trying to pick up some buzz, exactly what you were picking up there. But we'll start with the recent news. Alabama has released a statement. This has been out there for several days, but Jake Graham will be added to the Alabama coaching staff. He will be special teams coordinator, and he will also coach tight ends. What can you tell us about Jay?
Jay's a great recruiter. Tight end coach and your running back coach must be great recruiters. It is on the critical factor list, that ranks ahead of on-field coaching at those positions. I mean, you have to have killer recruiters. If they're not killing it on the road there, you're in trouble. And that's what Jay is. That's what Robert Gillespie is. I'm not saying they're not good coaches on the field. I'm just saying that their best quality is that. I think, really, really great hire for that reason, and has got experience and certainly experience coaching and playing that position. But remember, too, you're not going to be, coordinating the running game, but certainly someone that if, not saying that's the case here, but if your guy is not a great on-the-field teacher at that position, you can cover that up. But you've got to be a great recruiter, and that's what they got in Jay. And I think and Gillespie, too, sure, at the running back coach.
Well, and Nick Saban, I guess, has now finalized the offensive side of the football. Let me go to the defensive side, because there's been a lot of buzz about Carl Scott possibly being one of the leading candidates to join Mike Locksley up in Maryland. That is a big-time recruiter that has helped Alabama get some great guys. When you look at Carl Scott, they've already lost some other elite recruiters. It would hurt if Alabama loses Carl Scott.
There's no question about it. I have kind of heard and sensed from there that they expect and are expecting the possibility of a couple of defensive changes on the staff, meaning maybe some people moving out or them kind of shifting out and shifting some people in.
And this is at Alabama that you're talking about?
Yes, correct. So I think that we will let's just stand by and see if that works out. If he gets that job and some of the other things that I think are in play to add to the defensive staff. So I don't think they're complete on the defensive side, because I think there'll be some movement potentially.
Oh, wow. What a tease, Chris. Okay.
Yeah, no, I think there's some things that are still going to happen. I don't know that it's going to be major, but I think it depends upon maybe somebody maybe getting a job here or there, and then adding some sweeteners to the staff, maybe adding some experience to the staff. And it may just end up being more in an analyst role, but there's still a possibility that it could happen. Even an outside possibility that the coordinator position might be, at least there's a plan if they decide to make a move there. And that move will only be if the current defense coordinator, who I think is a little bit better than maybe a lot of Alabama fans think, ends up with another opportunity. All those things are in play on the defensive side. We're just going to have to let it play out.
That's Chris Landry, LandryFootball.com. Chris, I want to come back and spend an entire segment talking about the Senior Bowl, maybe some observations, some buzz. We'll talk about Mac Jones getting a lot of attention down in Mobile. That is LandryFootball.com is the website. It's podcast. It's the TV side of the channels and the YouTube and everything he connects. We'll talk about that. But it's LandryFootball.com. We will take phone calls if you want to jump in at 205-342-9904, 205-342-9904. Chris has been a scout. He's been a coach. He's been an administrator, and has worked with the likes of Nick Saban and Bill Belichick, and can help us answer some questions as we continue. I know I've got a lot of questions around the Senior Bowl. This is Alabama tradition, the past, present, and future of the Alabama Crimson Tide. Big Mike's Steakhouse in downtown Moundville, Wednesday through Saturday from 4 until 10. Great appetizers like the crab cakes, the Wickle fried pickles, the homemade fried mushrooms, the Chuck Wagon cheese fries. You'll find great salads like the Wildcat shrimp salad, the chicken cop salad. But listen, they are known for the great steaks, and they do dominate that. Whether it is the ribeye, the Highway 69 strip, the filet available there, you add the good stuff, right? Steak smothered topped with that caramelized onion and sauteed mushrooms. Add more about seafood, the Big Mike's entrees like the teriyaki chicken, and so much more. Our friends at Big Mike's, awarded as one of the great steaks in the wonderful state of Alabama. Big Mike's in downtown Moundville and throughout the great state of Alabama. Big Mike's Steakhouse.
You are listening to Alabama Tradition with Martin Houston and Ryan Fowler. Your connection to Tuscaloosa and the University of Alabama Athletics on Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
You got to know when to hold up, know when to fold up, know when to walk away, and know when to run. You never count your money. When you're sitting at the table, there'll be time enough for counting when the dealing's done. Every gambler knows that the secret to
surviving. All right, so we welcome you right back into Alabama tradition, the past, present, and future of the Alabama Crimson Tide. Chris Landry, LandryFootball.com. And Chris, why don't we stop right here and we'll talk about the website. A lot of people are tuned in and want more information. Tell us more about LandryFootball.com.
LandryFootball.com is a website, a football website that covers all aspects of football, from recruiting to evaluating college personnel, college coaching, the teams, the players, the coaches, the schemes at the college level. We do the same thing on the NFL level, the draft, free agency, NFL, one-stop shopping football. If you like football, you're going to love LandryFootball.com. We provide a lot of podcasts, shows like this that we're involved in, the Twitch TV channel. You can catch our shows on Facebook and YouTube and Twitch TV live as we're doing the podcast. And then, you know, obviously all the coaching search stuff to the insights of what's going on in the league, college football, the notebooks every day. As I said, we keep you up to date on the inside of things. The best way to describe it is, you know, having been around the league, it's like when running a team, you know, with an owner that asked you about what's going on and why you're doing this or that. That's kind of what we try to do to the subscribers. It's like you're being the owner and you're having an access to your own coaching and scouting department. That's what we do. It's less than $10 a month. It's actually cheaper than that if you take advantage of the year membership. And you can learn a lot of things that we think takes you inside the game that's a little bit different than what other people bring for you. So LandryFootball.com is where you want to go take advantage of that scouting season sale, as we like to call it, the scouting season, now that we've just got one game left being the Super Bowl.
So, Chris, let's go back to the Senior Bowl. I mean, I know it's a quarterback, and quarterbacks get all the love, a lot of the love. It seemed like just coming out of that week, it seemed like Mac Jones – maybe even gain some attention. I know we talked about it last Tuesday and even on Wednesday with our segment that airs every Wednesday at 4 o'clock. Mac Jones seemed to really gain a lot of attention down in Mobile.
Yeah, he was the best quarterback at the Senior Bowl and wasn't even close. He didn't get to play in the game, which was to the benefit of a guy like Kellen Mond, because it gave him a chance to do some things. I'm not huge on Kellen, but I thought he helped himself, and there's some teams that like him, so good for him on that. But Mac was the kind of the star of the show. He was outstanding in practice. He wanted to play dressed out. They weren't going to play him. They weren't, you know, because in practice you can kind of control things better than you can even in a game situation like this. So they didn't want to risk his injury, but did a really good job. Thought he was outstanding in the red zone, accurate, everything that you see. Look, and the only thing with Mac is, you know, we're not talking the biggest, and he's certainly not a guy that outside the pocket's going to do a whole lot. And, you know, the one thing that he does have at Alabama, had at Alabama, is that is pretty much a clean pocket. You give him a clean pocket, this guy can really deal. He's got a little bit of Joe Burrow in him. He's got a little bit of Kurt Warner in him, quite frankly. But, you know, off-platform throws in today's movement game, that's not going to be his strength. And if they go to a bad team and they don't protect very well, he'll struggle some, like most quarterbacks do, pocket guys do. But think this guy could play and be really successful in this league. I know this is what people want, so I'll just answer it and just say, I don't know where. You can call me. Where is he going to get drafted? Don't know. Okay, but I will say this. You know, there'll be some good quarterbacks. Obviously, Trevor Lawrence going high. Zach Wilson will go high. Justin Fields will go pretty high. I do know this. I don't know that this is the pick I would make if I were them, but the Carolina, the Panthers are picking at 8. That would be the earliest Mac Jones could possibly go. I don't see him going that early, but Carolina was there all week. You can't be around Mac Jones and not fall in love with this guy. He's like the most polite. If you want to draw a picture perfect guy that you want leading your organization, just the most humble, down to earth, you know, just peach of a guy, that's Mac. And so all the things in the classroom setting and everything, I think he was big hit. So we'll see. Carolina had a firsthand look. They need a quarterback. And that would be the highest I could see him going at 8. And Landry's not saying he's going at 8 to Carolina. I'm just saying I think that's the highest. But I think he'll go in the first round, even with a high second round grade on some people's boards. That's still going to put him somewhere in the mid to late first round.
And this is kind of a follow-up to what we talked about last week. There seems to be a lot of talk around Devontae Smith's weight. At what point would you be concerned? Like, let's say that you saw Devontae Smith weigh in at Pro Day, and I don't know, he's 165, 170. At what point is there a cutoff at the bottom end that you really become concerned as an NFL scout?
Well, I go the other way.
Okay.
I mean, if he lines up and he's 188, I'm thinking, well, good Lord, what's the name of the donut shop you've been, you know, sure, hitting over that? Because, I mean, that's that. Look, he's, as I mentioned last week, he's not going to get just that much bigger. You have to like him or not based upon what he is. Yes, as his body continues to grow, he can get a little bit bigger, develop a little bit more. But you have to look at him as a, in terms of a body build style, a lot like Marvin Harrison, who was very thin in his own right. At the combine, and I, you know, weighed Marvin at Syracuse coming out, and it was, you know, it was 168, 172 pounds, so he was in that range. That's Devontae, you know, in a few more pounds here or there, put on naturally, positively, without losing any speed or quickness. That'll come. It doesn't have to come right now. I think from a perception standpoint, it's going to be talked about. Look, he'll go high. I don't know how high. I can't assure people that he's going to go and play with Tua at the third pick. I really don't know. I think there's some people are going to say, I'm not taking a receiver that high, particularly a smaller receiver. I need a quarterback. I need a tackle. I need, you know, there'll be other guys with similar grades, and people may do something different. But yet, I still don't expect this guy to be around very long. I still think he'll go relatively high, and I think he'll be an outstanding player. And I think some of the comps that I have for him are valid, and I think he'll be a really good player, no doubt about it. But it's a different game, and remember that when you're evaluating a player, it's not the production that the player has at the college level. It's how the skill set translates from the college to the pro game. That's what it's all about. And the production level is affected somewhat by the skill set and the athletic traits, but it doesn't always translate. I think Devontae will be successful in the league. I think he's going to be a better slot, but he has position versatility to play on the outside. I think he's a Z or a slot, and I think that's what he'll be, and I think he'll be very difficult to defend. Look, you're going to be watching a game Sunday. I'm assuming everybody's going to be watching it Sunday. You don't have big guys. Tyreek Hill and Sammy Watkins and McCole Hardeman are not big guys. Now, those guys are speed merchants that are at a different level speed-wise than Devontae. Devontae's going to be fine. You know, he's going to go high, and he's going to be very productive. I just can't tell you exactly where he's going yet because I don't know.
When you look at Alex Leatherwood, what do you see at his next position? I think there was some buzz coming out of there that maybe he struggled in some areas but excelled in others. Where do you see Alex Leatherwood stop at the next level? Where do you think you'll end up at?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, he's – to me, he looks like a Pittsburgh Steeler offensive line. And I'm not saying that's who they're going to take it. By the way, they are at 24, and that's not a bad spot for him. But I'm not saying it for that. But he's a really good fit for him. He's in the mold of a Villanueva guy that they've had that they're going to lose him. He's a physical guy that comes off the ball, power blocker. That's his strength. I think he's a better right tackle fit, but can play left tackle. Very important because with seven offensive linemen that you dress each and every week, you got to have the ability to say, oh, okay, right side, go to the left side. Not easy to do. And it's the toughest at the tackle position because you're facing different, you know, different type alignments. But I don't think people realize how difficult it is to line up a left-handed stance or a right-handed stance. Very, very difficult to do. But I think he's capable of doing it and I think can be very effective. And that's kind of how I see him. And I think he's a – I mean, I think he's a first-round guy, and I think he's probably a later first-round guy.
Najee Harris goes down to the Senior Bowl and against his agent's advice decides to work out. What does that tell an NFL team?
Well, it it tells you kind of their mindset there. I'm here to work. I'm here to meet with you. I'm here to do as much as I physically can do to kind of prove to you what I am. That's what it's all about. It's a byproduct of where he's come from. It's a byproduct of how humble he is too. That's exactly what you want to see in the day and age of, I'm going to sit out, I'm going to do this. He's been taught the right way that you go out there and you look people in the eye and you man up and you know, you're not going to do anything stupid like play with an injury that could hurt you. But I'm going to come in and, you know, everybody knows it. Now I want to dress up. I want you to see what I look like in uniform. I want to be there and answer any questions. And everything that I can do, I'm going to want to do it for you to answer any questions that you have, sir. That's kind of how they are. You, as a coach and a scout, you can't ask for anything more than that. You really can't. That's class personified. That's what you want. That's what you're looking for.
Well, you look at Najee Harris, I mean, wow. Going to Najee, I know there was a big debate. I'll tell you what, why don't we answer this on the other side, because I need to get to break. Come back, because Najee considered coming out last year. I want to ask you how much did he gain from stock value of where it would be this time last year and where it is coming off of a record-setting year here in Tuscaloosa. That's Chris Landry. I'm Ryan Fowler. This is Alabama Tradition, the past, present, and future of the Alabama Crimson Tide.
Everybody on
Alabama Credit Union. It's alabamacu.com. Skip the line. Use the online banking and mobile app, whether it's deposits, checking account balances, transfer the funds, manage transaction, pay the bills, locate the branches and the ATMs. It's alabamacu.com. The app is incredible. I use it all the time as we count down the start of college football here in Tuscaloosa, always sponsored by Alabama Credit Union.
It's awesome. You're having a fun. Have some fun, man.
Talking Alabama Crimson Tide football on Alabama Tradition with Martin Houston and Ryan Fowler in Tuscaloosa on Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
On a Saturday, a regular crowd shuffles in. There's an old man sitting next to me, making love to his tonic and gin.
All right, so we continue with Alabama Tradition, the past, present, and future of the Alabama Crimson Tide. If you want to jump in, you're more than welcome to do that. We do have one question that we're going to go off the air that I'm going to pass on to Chris Landry. If you want to do that, you can tweet at us. We'll answer those questions. We'll get them worked into the conversation. That's Chris Landry. I'm Ryan Fallow. This is Alabama Tradition. Going back to Najee Harris, this time last year there was a big debate. Does he come out? Does he come back? How much can he gain? Evaluate that now in a past tense look. That did Najee Harris make the right decision?
Oh, he certainly did. I had a conversation with one of your contacts in the media that called me. In fact, you arranged it. Oh gosh, several weeks ago during the football season at some point about Najee, and we talked about how I liked him but. Just from that time on, how much better he's gotten. I think he's helped himself a great deal. I think being able to do it on a consistent basis, to be, in my opinion, is as valuable as anybody on that offense with a great offensive line, a great quarterback, great receiver. You know, you put Najee in that category is as valuable as any of them. For a guy that big, that powerful, to be that explosive, is very, very rare. And I think he's got an unbelievable future. I think he's shown an ability to be able to catch the ball. I think, you know, he can do things out of the backfield that maybe people did not think he was ideally fit for. I think he's really good. You know, he's tall, athletic frame, smooth, fluid runner. No question that he's got is, to me, I think he showed in a different level of explosiveness than people didn't think he had. Look, I mean, he's not going to be a guy that runs like a 200-pound guy. It's a different body frame, excuse me. But this guy is just plenty explosive. I think a feature back. And I think he's the best back in the draft. I think he's better than Travis Etienne. Some people in the league will like the versatility of Travis Etienne, and I get that if you're looking for that type of back. But if you're looking at a feature back, this guy's it. I absolutely would consider taking him, and I think he could also end up in the first round.
We also don't hear a lot of things about Patrick Surtain, at least from, you know, I mean, defensive play. You know, it's all about the offense now, right? I mean, it's the offensive world that we live in. But Patrick Surtain, obviously one of the top corners, if not the top corner. Where do you see Patrick Surtain in the NFL draft coming out of some of the activities?
You know, you may not hear about him. You're going to hear him. I think you're going to hear him earlier on draft day than maybe a lot of the guys. I think of the guys we talked about, other than Devontae, you know, and maybe Jalen, we kind of forget a little bit about Jalen. We can't forget him. I think of, outside of those two, I think Patrick's going to go highest. I think he's the top 10, top 12 pick. I think he's, you know, he didn't get a lot of talk this year because people didn't throw in his direction. But what a tremendously gifted cover guy that's got the versatility to play off, to play press. He's so smart. He has the ability to be able to stay on top of routes so effectively. I think he's one of the better players in this draft. And I think his ability to tackle well, I think his ability to play the ball, stay in phase, I think he's outstanding. I think he's one of the top, you know, dozen or so players in this league, no question about it.
We had a question coming from the Twitter side of things. Freddie Roach in year number one as defensive line coach. It's the first time coaching that position. Got a lot of production out of the defensive line coach. A lot of people think that Freddie's an up-and-coming star recruiting side of things. Even when he was playing here, he got a great personality. You could see how he could win the living rooms. Evaluate what Freddie did at the defensive line side of things.
Well, I think done a really good job. I think the defensive line played well. I kind of had a feeling they play well this year because so many of those young guys played the year before. So virtue of experience and reps, I thought they did a really good job. You know, one of the things that is a little bit lost is that everybody equates great defensive line play to what? Great pass rushers, bunch of sacks and all that. But you got to remember how Alabama builds their defensive front and what they require their defensive line. Their defensive line, they build a wall, and certainly they want to get good edge pressure. But it is about sound gap control, defending the run, and you've got to be able to do both very effectively. So use of hands, playing with good leverage is so really important. And they eschew the big play sack for pressure. What they want to do is collapse the pocket, negatively affect the quarterback. That often doesn't manifest itself in sacks or even sometimes pressures. But when you can get some pressures and you can get what is we consider negative impact on the quarterback, that's what's successful. And it doesn't get resonated in the stat chart. Now, when you're breaking down film, it does, because you see what they're doing and how they're playing. So a lot of times what you see in teams that are really high sack teams, that's great. It makes highlight plays, but they often get out of position when they don't get home on the sack. And I think what you see in Nick's defense, it's always been about sound gap control, getting good pressure, collapsing the pocket, and then again, finishing with the quarterback, but making sure that you're not out of position. And I think we saw that, and I think that they were able to teach that pretty well. And I do think he's a really bright young coach and learning from one of the best on how to play in the simulated defensive front.
All right, another question coming from the Twitter side of things. Chris, have you ever scouted a player coming out of high school that you thought was ready to play at the next level, or that maybe not could be, you know, being a starter, but if I'm understanding the question, the guy that was maybe NFL ready coming out of high school, is that, you ever have that before at all?
Not many, but in none of them, it's there have been a few athletically that look like they could do it, but emotionally and mentally, you know, being able to deal with the emotional maturity of playing against big boys and the physical part of doing it for 16 games, it just wouldn't work. But Adrian Peterson was one of them. He was one of them that just was a little different. And I'm not saying he could have done it, but he was probably the most capable of doing it. People will say, a lot of people will tell me, Herschel. Not really. When Herschel Walker came out of Wrightsville, Georgia, I mean, he's maybe as good a college football player as I've ever seen. And he played as a true freshman. But still, that jump from, because that single-A ball he played in Georgia, that he couldn't have done it. He could have done it. DJ Williams, who was a linebacker, played at Miami, also came, ironically, out of the state of Texas, was a really good player that was physically advanced to the point where you'd say, this guy might be able to do something that, you know, early on that would be reminiscent of the pro game. But like any of them, they all have to learn and kind of develop their physical skills to go along with their mental and emotional skills. But those are two that come to mind, no question.
So is, when you look at scouting, would you say that either one of those guys are the best guys you ever scouted? And you look at, I don't know if you ever want to say don't miss talent, but it is, when you look at those two guys, I mean, is that some of the guys that you evaluate and say, hey, those are cannot miss? I am 100% certain these guys are going to be stars at the next level.
Well, those are a couple, but there's a lot of guys that would fit into that category, okay, though, coming out of high school that I'd say, boy, these guys are tough. And Marcus Dupree was ridiculous. Marcus, had a kind of a tumultuous background and, from Philadelphia, Mississippi, and kind of went to Oklahoma, but got pulled back to Southern Miss and had, so there are a lot of guys that just never quite make it that were, that just have some issues. But those were certainly two of them. But there's a lot of them through the years that you say, boy, these guys are unique. These guys are unusually good and can do things that are just not normal, relatively speaking. So there have been a bunch of those guys that have come down the pike. And so, most of them make it, but the ones that don't, it's usually because of something off the field. And it's not necessarily bad. It's just they maybe don't want it as much. They like the game, but they like it because they're good at it. They don't have the passion for it, so their ceiling is a little bit lower. They never become great. I'll give you one that I thought was great. I mean, great coming out of high school, came out of Washington, D.C. I was still coaching at LSU at the time, right before I went into the NFL. It was a unbelievably gifted offensive lineman that had unbelievable feet, and you can see the normal body mass that would be really good and, yet needed more physical development. And that was Jonathan Ogden. Jonathan went out west to UCLA and went to the Ravens, and actually Ozzie Newsome drafted him and was a Hall of Famer. So, I mean, there's a few guys like that come down the pike that – if nothing else derails it, they certainly have the goods to be great. We see that quite often.
Well, and Chris, let me add this to it. On the flip side of that, talking about loving the game and the opposite side of this, I'll never forget being in Pro Day and bringing up Eddie Lacy, and we were got around him, and they pretty much talked about, well, where do you want to go? He said, I don't really care. I don't really – and they said, well, who do you watch on television? He said, well, I don't really watch football. And it was like you could see that he really didn't have a lot of interest in the NFL. He wanted it because there was a paycheck. But then as he was talking about him, he had more interest about telling you about games and role-playing games and all this different stuff. That was his passion. And I think we saw that kind of show up in the NFL.
It happens a lot. It happens a lot more than people think. It's why that we focus a lot on how a guy interviews and how we get to know him and what makes him tick. What is the two things that I look for the most in evaluating a player's intangibles? What is the player's capacity to learn and what is his willingness to learn? How bad do they want it? You don't ask somebody, do you really want it? Eddie Lacy, oh, yeah, I want it. Of course, everybody says they want it. You know, what do their actions say about how bad do they want it? Those are the things. Look, if you're going to be great at something, I don't know that I've ever seen anybody that's great at something that really doesn't like it. Well, I've seen guys be successful, and I see guys with talent, but they're never quite as good. How many guys were the quote-unquote next Michael Jordan? And then, you know, really, and go on and on and on, and none of them ever were, with maybe a couple, you know, some people will look, maybe no one. Well, what made Michael Jordan great? Well, the physical skills were there, but he also had the ability that he every practice was like the end of the world for him. I mean, he wanted to dominate, and it rose the level of his team and his teammates around him. That's what you want. That's what greatness is. We're going to watch a great player, a great career. It's not to the end yet, but with Tom Brady. What makes him great? Physically, he's gotten stronger and better. He is physically stronger throwing the football now than when he came out of Michigan. Why is that? Why does he go through that? Why is he playing at 43 and thinking about playing when he's 45? Well, yes, the certain genes and good luck staying healthy is an important part of it. But look at all the things that he sacrifices to play football. You know, how much it matters to him. That's what greatness is. When you have the physical skills to do all of those things successful, but you have the intangible qualities to be great and the focus. That's the difference.
I got to get to break right here. We'll come back. We're going to take one phone call, and we'll wrap up the loose ends. Alabama tradition. That's Chris Landry. I'm Ryan Fowler on Tide 100.9.
Anyway,
Med Center Urgent Care Family Medicine. No appointment necessary. Online check-in available. When you talk about our great locations, it is Highway 69 South in the Lowe's Shopping Center, Northport on McFarland Boulevard, the North River location, Hoover off of Highway 150, Demopolis and Fayette. The great doctors that serve our community. Med Center is also excited to offer telehealth. We're offering this service through our Hoover location and the new location off Med Center North River. Our doctors that live in this area and serve our community, the great doctors of Med Center Urgent Care Family Medicine. Remember, the online check-in, very convenient. If you're a little under the weather, you've got an injury, you need to get ready for Saturday. It's Med Center Urgent Care Family Medicine, a huge part of our community here in Tuscaloosa and West Alabama.
Lots of sunshine this afternoon. The high today in the upper 40s at 49. Clear tonight, the low at 28. Tomorrow is sunny day, the high 52. Thursday becoming cloudy. Rain moves in here Thursday night, the high Thursday at 60. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9.
Holding down this Chiefs offense is so difficult, and even when you do for stretches, they can turn it over really quickly. So I think the Chiefs are very, very difficult to beat here. I'm hoping that it's close. If both play their best game and the Chiefs don't make mistakes, it might be a decisive Chiefs win.
So the boo came from James Ludeman, and James is
I completely disagree with that assessment.
Well, and you can disagree with it, but you have to do it on your show because we don't have enough time. But I'll talk about James Ludeman. James is a lifelong Tampa Bay fan, so
there you go.
Yeah,
right.
You got the boo. So he's
I got you.
That's a crazy part about living in a state that doesn't have an NFL team. Everybody's got their team, and it's almost like a big fight. You know, people pick on me because my Cowboys. We got Dolphin fans here. It's pretty crazy living in a state like this. He didn't like my Cowboys either. But anyway, well, let's get back to LandryFootball.com. Tell us more as we're wrapping up the loose ends.
Well, you can check it out. It's real simple. Pick around there. See what you like. We think you'll love it. Give us a shot. Try it out for a month. Try it out for a year. You get the best discount. But if you like football, you want to get a breakdown of the game of football from a coaching and scouting perspective, if you want to see the game from that viewpoint, from the recruiting side, evaluating rosters during the season, evaluating the games. But this time of year, keeping you updated on the transfer portal, the coaching movement, the roster analysis in college, the NFL, it's about free agency, it's about the draft preparation. So it never stops. It really never ends. In fact, there's more news going on between now and the start of the season than there is during the season. During the season, it's just ball. It's just games. So it is a 12-month-a-year you know, 7-day-a-week proposition to keep you up to date on everything in the world of football, but explaining why. How did the Matthew Stafford trade go down and, you know, what might happen in this situation and that situation. We've got it all covered for you at LandryFootball.com. So, again, like having your own scouting department, your own coaching department for at your disposal for less than a magazine subscription.
It's LandryFootball.com. That's Chris Landry. I'm Ryan Fowler. We're going to wrap up this edition of Alabama Tradition, and we'll hand it off to James Ludeman coming up in just a couple of seconds. That's Chris Landry. I'm Ryan Fowler. Good night, T-10. I'll see you tomorrow at 2 o'clock here on Tide 100.9.